Welcome to the Sadler Lectures podcast. Responding to popular demand, I'm converting my philosophy videos into sound files you can listen to anywhere you can take an MP3. If you like what you hear and want to support my work, go to patreon.com/sadler. I hope you enjoy this lecture. One of the absolutely key distinctions that Immanuel Kant makes, not only in his work, The Prolegomena to Any Future Metaphysics, but throughout his work, is that between analytic and synthetic. And he first brings this up in the preamble on the peculiarities of all metaphysical cognition in the Prolegomena. And he does so in section 2 concerning the kind of cognition which alone can be called metaphysical. And why does he do it at that point? Because he wants to ultimately say what metaphysical cognitions or judgments consist in. What kind are they? And it's going to turn out that they are synthetic a priori. But first, we have to get clear about what analytic and synthetic actually mean. And it's tempting sometimes for people who have been trained perhaps with other philosophers in mind to say, well, you know, you got your analytic and that's sort of like what Kant is describing, and there's nothing added to the subject or terms or content. And then you've got synthetic and, you know, analytic is a priori, or if we want to use Hume's terms, relations of ideas, and synthetic is all experiential, you know, a posteriori, if we want to use another term, right? And Kant is not doing that. Kant is introducing something that he thinks is incredibly important, the synthetic a priori. So what are these basic, you know, classifications? Now, I want to point out another thing too. So here, Kant is talking about judgments, Urteile, right? But he'll also talk about cognitions or concepts being either analytic or synthetic. And he'll also, in this very preamble, use the term propositions, or more literally, sentences, Sätze in German, to describe them as well. And of course, these are all connected. A proposition can express a judgment. A judgment can be a cognition or an idea, right? So these are all not to be opposed to each other. I just want to point out that Kant is not always using the language of judgment as such, but you could say it's always lingering in the background. So what is the analytic? He tells us that analytic judgments are explicative. So they're telling you what something is, erläternd, right? They're not adding anything to the equation, you might say. Pun intended, because we're going to be talking about a mathematical example. And then synthetic ones are ampliative, erweiternd. So they are taking us further, you could say. How so? So analytic judgments add nothing, nichts hinzutun, to the content, the inhalt of the cognition. And I should point out too that Kant uses this term content here for both of these. The synthetic actually increase, vergrößern, make bigger, right? The given cognition, they add something to it. So, you know, if we want to phrase it in our own contemporary language, analytic judgments don't give us anything new. They do sometimes clarify, they explain, right? That's kind of good. Synthetic actually adds something new to what it is that we are talking about, thinking about, making a judgment about it. Now, he'll explain this by saying analytic judgments express nothing in the predicate. Now, what is a predicate? So this is a little bit of an old-fashioned way of talking. A subject is the thing that we're saying something about or judging something about. The predicate is what we are saying or making a judgment about it. So, you know, for example, he says, if I say all bodies are extended, I have not amplified in the least my concept, subject of body, but I've only analyzed it. That's why it's analytic, right? As extension was really thought to belong to that concept before the judgment was made, though it was not expressed. So to go back to earlier thinkers, you can say in analytic judgments, the predicate is already in some way contained in the subject. You just don't realize that it's there. And by looking at it more carefully, you now bring that to light and you're like, aha, now I see, right? So he says that on the other hand, this judgment, somebody's have weight, contains in its predicate something not actually thought in the universal concept of body. It amplifies my knowledge. That's why it's a synthetic judgment. It adds something to the concept, and so that's why we call it that. And then he goes on, and he says, what's the common principle, what these things are based upon of analytic judgments? And it's the principle of what we sometimes call the principle of contradiction or non-contradiction, the Satz der Widerspruchs. Widerspruch is contradiction in the strongest sense. And so ultimately, we should be able to trace all of these back to the principle of non-contradiction. And he says that all of these depend wholly on that and are in their nature because of that, a priori cognitions. Whether the concepts that supply them with matter be empirical or not. For the predicate of an affirmative analytic judgment is already thought in the concept of the subject, of which it cannot be denied without contradiction. That's where the contradiction comes in. You're using the principle of non-contradiction. A thing cannot be, you know, this and this in the same way at the same time. There's all sorts of provisos. So you can say if the predicate really is contained in the subject, you can't deny it of the subject. You might not know it's there until you look, but that's how it works. And so such is the case of the judgments. All bodies are extended. We just looked at that one. And no bodies are unextended. And he tells us that because of this, okay, they're all a priori, even if they have some concepts that are empirical. And so he says, take gold is a yellow metal. Now, this is what will lead, by the way, to later thinkers who are using such terms like the logical positivist to say, well, you know, analytic judgments are not necessarily like a priori, as in being in the very nature of things, and we uncover them with our minds. Maybe they're about language. Kant doesn't say that. He's not worried about that at this time. But he says, okay, take gold as a yellow metal. I require no experience beyond my concept of gold, which contains the thought that this body is yellow and metal. So the very concept of gold includes those things. That's what we mean by gold. Okay, so far so good. That's analytic. I think analytic concepts, judgments are easy to wrap our head around. What about synthetic? So in synthetic judgments, again, we're adding something that isn't already there. It's not something just to be unpacked from the given cognition or materials that we're working with. Now, does this type of judgment have a common principle? Some are going to suggest that they are based on the principle of sufficient reason. And he's going to say, you know, synthetic judgments, they require some sort of different principle. We have synthetic a posteriori judgments of empirical origin, but there's others which are certain a priori, which spring from the pure understanding of reason, and they cannot possibly spring from the principle of analysis, namely the principle of contradiction, but require a different one. But this will still be subject to the principle of contradiction, as he says. So, you know, we're going to come back to that in just a moment. One candidate would be the principle of sufficient reason. Kant is actually going to say, that's not going to work. We need to find something better than that. Now, he's going to engage in some classification. And so he starts out talking first about judgments of experience, Erfahrungsurteile in this case, right? Erfahrung is experience, the things that we experience in the world of sensibility or in our own, you know, sort of inner space, you could say, right, which yields the laws of empirical psychology, he's just said a little bit earlier. So these are all a posteriori by their very definition because they're about experience. A posteriori means we did experience this, or somebody could experience it. And he says, these are always synthetic. It would be absurd to base an analytic judgment on experience because the concept suffices for the purpose without requiring any experience. So a body is extended, not a judgment of experience, but, you know, we can come up with all sorts of other things. Coffee tastes bitter, but you add some cream to it and now it's got sweetness, right? You can't actually deduce that a priori. You need to actually experience that out in the world. Now, we're not that interested in that in the Prolegomena, but what are we really interested in? The other two classifications, mathematical judgments. Judgments that are made within the discipline of mathematics or about the objects of mathematics. And we're going to talk about this elsewhere in a bit more fullness, but what we want to get across here, he says, mathematical judgments are all synthetic. And there's an important point here. He says, this seems to have altogether escaped the observation of those who have analyzed human reason. It seems directly opposed to their conjectures. Who does he have in mind there? Well, Hume, of course, who he will actually talk about a little bit later on, but also Leibniz, René Descartes, these great mathematicians who contributed to the discipline itself, you know? Maybe he'd actually include Pascal in there as well, you know, another great philosopher and mathematician. And they all assumed that mathematics stuff was analytic, and Kant's saying it's not. And he's going to give you a number of reasons for that. He says that, listen, they're all judgments a priori because they carry with them necessity. And then he uses the example of 7 plus 5 equals 12. And he says it might be first thought that this is a mere analytic judgment following from the concept of the sum of 7 and 5 according to the principle of contradiction. And then he says, that's not really the case. The concept of 12 is by no means thought by merely thinking of the combination of 7 and 5. And analyze this possible sum as we may, we shall not discover 12 in the concept. We must go beyond these concepts by calling to our aid some intuition corresponding to one of them. And Kant isn't particularly interested at this point in what intuition that exactly is. Could be counting on our fingers, it could be something else. But the point is, mathematics is actually synthetic. Now, does that mean that every single proposition within the field that we call mathematics is synthetic? He says, no, no. I mean, there's some that are analytic, but those are not really at the center of mathematics. Same thing with geometry, by the way. He says that, you know, there are some things that are analytic and depend on the principle of contradiction. They only serve as a method of concatenation, like putting things together, not as principles. So for example, A equals A, the whole is equal to itself, or A plus B is greater than A, the whole is greater than its part. And he says that we use these in mathematics. We could think of, you know, the transitive principle or, you know, all the different other things that we might use. And Kant is saying, yeah, okay, that's fine. Those are analytic. They're not at the core of what we're doing in mathematics. Okay, so far so good. What about the third kind, metaphysical judgments? Well, this is where he has like a whole discussion, and that, you know, it's really what the work itself is about. And he says, metaphysical judgments, properly so called, because there's going to be an analog here to mathematical judgments. There are metaphysical judgments that, you know, you could say are analytic, but that's because they're not metaphysical judgments properly so called, eigentlich. They just happen to belong as sort of like tools to metaphysics as a science. So he says we have to distinguish the judgments belonging to metaphysics from metaphysical judgments properly so called. Many of the former are analytic. They only afford means to metaphysical judgments, which are the whole aim, the whole point of the science, and which are always synthetic. And then he's going to give us some examples. If there be concepts belonging to metaphysics, for example, substance, which has been, you know, part of metaphysics since Aristotle, you could say, inaugurated the science. I mean, we could say that it exists before Aristotle, but he's the one who we associate with the name metataphysica, right? So he goes on and he says, if there's concepts belonging to metaphysics, the judgments springing from simple analysis also belong to metaphysics. By means of such analytic judgments, we seem to arrive at the definition of a concept, but as the analysis of a pure concept of the understanding does not proceed in any different manner from the dissection of any other, you know, even empirical concepts not belonging to metaphysics, it falls at the concept indeed, but not the analytic judgment is properly metaphysical. The science has something special and peculiar to itself in the production of a priori, now notice the term here, not judgments, cognitions, which have to be distinguished from the features it has in common with other rational knowledge. And so he's going to say, listen, metaphysics is concerned with synthetic judgments a priori. So is mathematics, for that matter. We're going to look at those in a bit more detail. There is one other thing that needs to be mentioned, and this is coming up in the next section first. And he says that this is a remark on the general division of judgments into analytic and synthetic. And he says, you've got to make this division. If you want to critique human understanding, you've got to use this. This is why dogmatic philosophers neglected this apparently obvious distinction. So Wolf and Baumgarten came to seek the proof of the principle of sufficient reason in Principle of Contradiction. The principle of sufficient reason, if it indeed holds, is a synthetic a priori judgment, right? So it would belong to metaphysics. You're not going to get it from mere analysis. And then Kant says, you know, in Locke's essay concerning the human understanding, I find an indication of my division. And so he's finding, you know, a predecessor there. And then he says that not even Hume really figured this out. So, you know, we're probably not going to be able to use the principle of sufficient reason because that's part of metaphysics. We can't use that to figure out, first of all, is metaphysics even possible? Are, you know, a priori a synthetic propositions possible? We have to figure that out on our own through the transcendental philosophy, which Kant takes himself to be doing, right? And we can't use a part of metaphysics to bootstrap our way into metaphysics. But we've got now the distinction between analytic and synthetic, something that I think people often do find a bit confusing when they're reading Kant. Sometimes the explanations of it are not all that helpful and can lead us astray. It's very important for Kant that we get very clear about what these mean right at the start of the Prolegomena. So hopefully this has actually clarified those notions in this distinction of the kinds of content of judgments, propositions, and cognitions for you. Special thanks to all of my Patreon supporters for making this podcast possible. You can find me on Twitter at Philosopher70, on YouTube at the Gregory B. Sadler channel, and on Facebook on the Gregory B. Sadler page. Once again, to support my work, go to patreon.com/sadler. Above all, keep studying these great philosophical works.